This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
I'm super excited to be talking to you about our work today related to the gut microbiome and how this complex community of microbes within our gut has changed over the course of human lifestyle change with profound species loss in post-industrialized societies. I wanted to start with this cross-section of a colon in which you can see the gut microbes in the bottom right. That's all these brightly colored rods. And they're in very close contact to the host tissue in the top left, indicated by the blue circles there. And these two aspects of our biology, our human cells and our microbes, are separated by this thin mucus lining that serves as an important barrier to keep the two aspects of our biology separated, but is also an interface that is important for the exchange of biological information between these two entities. So I hope you can appreciate that humans are in fact a walking ecosystem made up of both microbial parts and our human cells. We know that the microbiota is intricately connected to human biology. Many experiments over the past 15 years has demonstrated that it is highly connected to our metabolism, our immune system, and also our central nervous system. This community of microbes is highly malleable and is an important lever on our host biology, making it important for precision health. This malleability, however, can also be a vulnerability, as it can change in result to changes in lifestyle, and that could be detrimental to the host. Here I have a schematic that shows one of the major roles that the microbiome plays. Humans that eat a diet that's very low in dietary fiber or high in simple nutrients such as sugar and starch, these components of diet are rapidly absorbed in our circulation and don't really make it to the colon where the majority of our microbes live. However, if humans eat a diet that's rich in dietary fiber, these complex carbohydrates are largely not digested until they reach the colon, which is where gut bacteria can then ferment these carbohydrates, resulting in microbial metabolites such as short-chain fatty acids that can enter our circulation. And these metabolites are important in things like regulating our inflammation, and also beneficial effects on our metabolism. In the absence of a high-fiber diet, the gut bacteria are forced to rely on the only carbohydrate source that's remaining, which is that mucus lining I showed you in the prior slide, which means that in the absence of dietary fiber, our gut bacteria start eating us as opposed to our food. We wanted to model this in an experimental system in which we used 4 generations of mice. And in this experiment, we fed mice either a high-fiber diet or a low-fiber Western-style diet. So in the bottom panel, you can see each individual row is a different mouse, and each column represents a species of bacteria that we identified within their microbiome. And so in the bottom control mice, you can see that the microbiome over generations is faithfully reconstituted, with by the 4th generation, the majority of the microbiome still present. However, in the Western diet mice, low-fiber diet mice, you see that even after the first generation, many microbes are lost. And by the 4th generation, there's only about a third of the microbial diversity that was present in the initial generation. Even putting these mice back on a high-fiber diet does not restore diversity, indicating that these species have been irreversibly lost over the course of this experiment. And this experiment really showed what had been seen in prior publications, in which looking at the microbiome of non-Western individuals, we realized that, for example, in this study by DeFilippo in 2010, that the microbiome of children in Burkina Faso actually looked very different from what we had seen in Italian children and what had been seen in so-called healthy microbiomes of Western individuals. A couple years later, Jeff Gordon's group showed a similar set of studies in which they looked at Americans relative to South Americans or individuals in Malawi and found, as you can see in the top right, many less species of bacteria in the American adults relative to these two other groups. And in the bottom right is a principal coordinate analysis, which shows microbiome composition. Basically, if the two dots are close together, that means those two individuals' microbiomes are highly similar. If the dots are far apart, that means their composition is quite different. And you can see that the American microbiomes in blue on the right are quite distinct from that of individuals living a non-industrial lifestyle in Malawi and South America. And this was also discussed in a highly important paper by Marty Blazer and Stan Falco, in which they discuss the consequences of a disappearing microbiota in Western individuals and the possible impact on human health. So all these studies indicate that there is a potential incompatibility between our human genome and our microbiome that could be a result of asymmetric plasticity over evolutionary time. We know that the microbiome is highly responsive to lifestyle and diet changes, things like antibiotics and other medical advances. These can change the microbiome on this time scale of weeks or months. However, the human genome takes much longer to adapt to changes in environment. So that leads to this possibility that in the industrialized world, the microbiome is now no longer compatible with the human genome. And so our lab is interested in studying common features of the microbiome as humans spread across the planet and whether the microbiome has changed recently in the industrialized world. In this study that was focused on the Hadza hunter-gatherers of Tanzania, we also incorporated a global metagenomic data set of over 1,800 individuals living a broad range of lifestyles, ranging from hunter-gatherer to rural agrarian and also industrial and post-industrialized lifestyles. And I think in one of the most striking figures from this study, we looked at microbiome composition in the Hadza, that's in the top, and the transitional populations. These are individuals that are living a rural agrarian lifestyle and then also industrial population. Each row is a different individual, and each column is a species of microbe that we either detected in their microbiome if it's colored in dark blue or was absent if it's colored in light blue. And what I hope you can appreciate from the slide is this huge swath of microbes in the industrial population that is rare or absent relative to what we see in the Hadza and other transitional populations. In this important study by the Kostic group at Harvard, they looked at paleo feces from 1,000 to 2,000 years ago and sequenced the microbiome from these samples. And looking at this principal coordinate analysis, you can see that the microbiome composition of these paleo feces is actually much more similar to that of non-industrialized microbiomes and distinct from that of industrialized populations, indicating that the industrialized microbiome is a more recent configuration. Okay, now I'm going to transition over to Justin.
Okay, thank you, Erica. And so one of the major questions that we're interested in is, you know, what microbes were associated with humans over long periods of our evolution? Were there co-associations? Were there co-migrations of microbes with humans around the planet? And so we've taken a very straightforward approach to this, just comparing the gut microbiomes of two indigenous populations that live on opposite sides of the planet. So the Hadza hunter-gatherers of Tanzania that you've already heard about, and the Chimani horticulturalists of Bolivia. And this is a large collaborative study ranging from anthropologists to microbiome scientists to population geneticists. And so the major question here is, are there species that are common or shared between the Hadza and Chimani? And if so, what are the evolutionary relationships of these species? And so we again performed metagenomic sequencing. This sequencing of stool results in all these short reads that we can assemble into genomes. We call these metagenome assembled genomes, or MAGs. And each one of these MAGs represents a different strain's genome. We can perform compositional analysis, and that's shown here in these bars. The Chimani and Hadza have a similar composition by phylum. If we look in the Chimani, we were able to define around 13,000 MAGs. Those MAGs we can bin into different species, and we see that there are around 1,440 species in the Chimani, so fewer species than we defined in the Hadza. But if we look at the overlap here, we can see that the vast majority of the species, 1,244 of these 1,440, or 87% of the species in the Chimani cohort, are also found in Hadza individuals. So already a signal that there are many shared species, and the question is, you know, do these species have a common ancestry dating back to when the Hadza and Chimani shared common ancestors? The vast majority of these shared species, you know, over 70%, are completely missing in industrialized microbiomes. And so the first analysis we wanted to perform was just looking at the identity of genomes of strains within the same species. So we look at average nucleotide identity, or ANI, and we perform these analyses looking at the pairwise ANI within the Hadza, within the Chimani, and between the Hadza and Chimani. And so we can look at those ANIs and put them in a distribution. Those distributions are shown on the right. So this is aggregated for all species. And again, comparisons of strains within each species. We see the distributions for within population and between population centering around 98%, slight shifts to the right for the within population distributions, but the effect is fairly small, so that would indicate a closer relatedness of the strains within populations. But the real startling signal, or very striking signal, is in the tail of the distribution, with strains that are very closely related to one another, have a very high ANI. So these are strains that shared common ancestry recently. We see very strong signals within populations, but very few close relatives between populations, between the Hadza and Chimani. So, you know, this was an indication, or is consistent with these populations being separated from one another, ongoing evolution occurring, but very little strain sharing between the Hadza and Chimani, consistent with them being isolated. But so we wanted to look at the timing in a little more detail, but molecular clock analyses are very difficult because of all the horizontal gene transfer that occurs between bacteria. We're lucky to be collaborating with our colleague at Stanford, Ben Good, and his wonderful student, Jiro Liu. They're population geneticists. They understand how to do these analyses and understand how to identify the regions of the genome that haven't resulted from homologous recombination from horizontal gene transfer. And so Ben and Jiro established that out of the 541 species that are shared between the Hadza and Chimani that have sufficient data for the type of analysis they're doing, the vast majority of these, 465 of these species, have not been shared between the Hadza and Chimani within the past 5,000 years. So there's no recent common ancestry of these 465 species. That can be represented in these maps. So for each species, just showing four of the 465 here, we can represent the number of MAGs with the dot, the strain sharing rate with the line, and the circle back onto that same population just means that the strains are being shared within the population, but there's no line between the populations because there's no recent strain sharing of these closely related strains between the Hadza and Chimani. This pattern is very different for a small number of species. 33 of these species are shared at a high rate recently between the Hadza and Chimani. This was perplexing to us. And we looked at this in more detail, and we see that not only are they shared, these strains shared between the Hadza and Chimani, but they're also shared with all the industrialized populations that we've looked at in Europe, Asia, and North America. So globally distributed species that are shared between the Hadza and Chimani, familiar names to us, Acromantia mucinifolia, Bacteroides ovatus. These are all the species that are very prevalent and abundant in industrialized microbiomes. An indication here that perhaps the industrialized microbiome is being shared with and transmitted to these indigenous populations. So Ben and Giroux wanted to do a deeper timing of these strains when they were to identify when they were reproductively isolated from one another. So they compared strains between the Hadza and Chimani and performed an analysis that allowed them to figure out the median split time. In these plots, every dot represents an individual shared species. And we can see quite a range here, but the median split time is over 43,000 years ago, lining up with between when humans were estimated to migrate out of Africa and populate the rest of the world and the settling of the Americas. The similar calculation looking at split times of strains from species within Asia and North America, Europe and North America, we see much more recent split times, perhaps indicating that these bacteria are being transferred through globalization, travel, and things like that. So we think that this data is consistent with transgenerational maintenance of the gut microbial communities through these ancient human migrations. So whether in Africa or migrating around the world, humans appear to have been harboring hundreds of many of the same species for over 50,000 years. In industrialized societies, we've lost most of these species. We don't know what this means for our health, but it does bring up the question, could reintroduction of these lost species restore co-evolved microbial functions and improve our health? There are, of course, very important ethical issues here, but something that we need to be discussing. We know that chronic inflammatory diseases are on the rise. I've just picked a couple graphics here that illustrate some of these. We know our microbial identity has changed in the industrialized world. We know our gut microbes can impact our immune system. It brings up the possibility that this new microbiome may be misregulating our immune system, pushing us towards different chronic diseases. So we've been talking a lot about the composition of the microbiome. We've also looked at the functions that are encoded in the gut microbiome as we can with this metagenomic data. Just asking the question of what functions are enriched in industrialized populations, we see signatures of oxidative stress, redox sensing, perhaps a signature of inflammation that's been selected for in the industrialized gut. We also know through looking at metabolites in the Hadza versus American stool that the Hadza produce much higher concentrations of the main short-chain fatty acids that are produced through fiber fermentation, short-chain fatty acids that are known to regulate the immune system and barrier function. And this probably reflects both a depleted microbiome in industrialized populations and also our low fiber diet. So we imagine this gradient from healthy to inflamed with the industrialized population sitting somewhere in the middle. We are really interested in developing methods that allow us to figure out where an individual sits along this gradient and whether different interventions can move people away from this precipice of disease or perhaps even treat people with disease, converting their microbiome into a healthier microbiome. Just to finish up, I wanted to circle back to this multi-generational experiment that Erica showed you before, again, in the fourth generation on the Western diet. Putting the mice back on a healthy, high-fiber diet could not bring back this diversity that they lost until you bring back the microbes. So if you perform a fecal transplant, bringing the microbes from the high-fiber-fed mice, put them into the mice that have the depleted microbiome and feed them a high-fiber diet, they're able to reconstitute much of that diversity that they lost. So it may take diet plus reintroduction of microbes to reinstall some of this lost diversity, some of these lost species. And just to finish up, I want to acknowledge all the people in our group that contributed to this work. Our many great collaborators, thanks to all the funding agencies, and thanks to all of you for watching. Once again, thanks to the organizers and CARTA for this opportunity.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.